This is Gaten the Mecha, the weekly anime and manga show where we take things one step further. I analyze everything from arcs to OPs to episodes in my wacky but enjoyable quest to make sense of all of it. Welcome back to Gaten the Mecha. I'm your host Jamal today, and in this episode we are discussing the anime awards of the past few months. So anime awards season on the whole is coming to a close. Over the past few months we've seen quite a few things be awarded, some of which have dominated the scene, some of which have been, what you can argue, robbed. So in this episode I will be giving my critique basically of some of the awards which have passed. I'm going to mostly be focusing on the Crunchyroll Anime Awards, the Funimation Anime of the Decade or Funimation Decade of Anime Awards, and then the Newtype 2019 Awards. And just as an alert now, there won't be heavy spoilers for the episode today. If anything, I'll just be talking briefly about the plots which some things surround. So if I'm talking about fight scene, I might talk about who is fighting who, and that might be later in the series. And if I'm talking about antagonist, that might be based on, you know, what their role is as an antagonist, not particularly where they end up though. If you do enjoy today's episode, feel free to leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts that have reviews. It'll be really appreciated. And without further ado, here is the episode for this week, that is episode 32 of Gaten the Mecha, the award critique. I feel like award season is very interesting, and I'll tell you why. So I feel like it is interesting because for those that keep up with the awards and, you know, acclamation, so I'll admit me, I'm not going to be that guy and say, you guys care about awards. The interesting thing about it is that there's a bit of a paradox, because if you want wins, you can argue whether you agree with it or not, a reinforcement of what you like and what you believe in, and people elsewhere can see that. And, you know, it resonates. It creates a group of people which believe in one thing, or at least reinforce each other's ideas that this is good stuff, this is good content. Whereas in reverse, it's kind of like, wait, what? This doesn't deserve it? It's a bit of award seasons in general, and awards and competition naturally in themselves will always have something left out. Not everything will be equal to one another, because that is the nature of competition. And so when looking at these awards today, do consider the fact that I am basing my arguments on how things were left out, and that will evidently result in a bit of bias. This critique isn't going to be completely neutral because it's my critique, evidently, and so I'm going to be giving my inputs as to what I think deserves something, and that might result in a bit of comparison, but I don't mean it to be X, Y, and this is bad, this is good, in regards to some of the shows which I might be criticizing. I'm quite fond with most of the things that were nominated in the first place, so that's not really the problem. It's just, in comparison, I don't think that X did such, in comparison to Y, which did this, alternatively, blah blah blah. And so to start this critique, let's just get to the basis of my criticisms. So there are two things which I'm kind of going to be anti or just against. First off, I'm not going to be relying on the popularity contest argument. Although it might be true, I think it's not very productive for, you know, analytical discourse. As I'm giving a critique, I'm giving you my opinion as to such, and so just naming it a popularity contest just sort of waters the argument down, and that's not really what I want to discuss. I want to discuss art and what I think changes the game and those sorts of things, rather than nullifying my argument down to, oh, this is more popular and that's why it won. It's what I think, in my subjective opinion, should have won or should have been given more credit. And then the second one, which I'm also, this kind of feeds into the popularity contest argument. This is one you see on Twitter a lot. It's the watch more anime argument. And I'm not going to be doing that either, one, because I think it's a bit snobby, and I can understand where those people are coming from potentially. But as I said, I think it's a bit snobby in saying that just because someone likes a show, I can't assume that they haven't seen anything else to judge relatively within their subjective opinion. Relatively, that could be a really good show or the best show. And so I'm not really someone to judge on that. No one likes the elitist, but when someone hasn't seen many shows in comparison to them, it's okay to call them out for liking something very much in the mainstream. And that's something I'm not going to be doing. It's, again, not very productive for the discourse which I'm going to be trying to have today. I'm not really someone to call out the community, and I'm not going to be doing that. I think it's just a waste of my time. And so anyway, let's get into the awards of the past few months. To start today, I think I'm going to begin with the Funimation Decade of Anime Awards. These were fan voted, but I didn't really care whether they were or not, because that's not really what I'm trying to argue. And so I think let's start with a positive, or let's start with something which I mostly agree with, and that is Kimi no Na wa winning the Film of the Decade. I can understand this, and the reason why I do understand it is because from a personal perspective, I think Kimi no Na wa is a bold movie. We can say arguably Shinkai is a relatively safe filmmaker, and that isn't a bad thing because he makes some beautiful films, but he is a safe filmmaker in how he sticks to a very similar formula, or at least a very basic formula that underlies most of his movies or underpins most of his movies, and then he works tirelessly and in an almost inhuman fashion to transform that framework, or at least create a structure around it that is completely bold and different to a lot of things which we've seen. I don't think I've told my story of how I watched Kimi no Na wa. It's very basic. It was one night where I was bored and I couldn't think of anything to do. I hadn't seen Kimi no Na wa. I'm like, what should I do? I know, let's watch Kimi no Na wa because I haven't seen it yet. And so I did that. I was pretty blown away. And the reason for that is I think that Kimi no Na wa was a great way for introducing so many forms of cinematography I just didn't know were possible with anime. Although it did come out in 2016, we have seen some works prior to that, and there are plenty of films which have been able to master cinematography in a sort of similar fashion. But Kimi no Na wa being on the mainstream stage, I think, was a beautiful way of showcasing that to a lot of people. I don't know if everyone took notes of it, but I think that is one of the reasons why I would consider Kimi no Na wa as one of the main films, and arguably one of the best of the decade. But not only in terms of cinematography and as a technical piece, but also I think as a thematic piece, I think we owe a lot to Shinkai in how he's been able to transform such narratives. He does do quite a bold thing in terms of introducing the whole theme of time travel and introducing almost these two separations. Kimi no Na wa structurally is actually quite a complex piece of work, and how he's able to divide these time periods, introduce the whole time element, the convergence and divergence. He works really hard to make this more than a boy-girl film, which he usually works on and still does work on, Tenki no Ko being evidence of that. He works really hard on this, and it just shines through in almost every element and minute of the film. You had other competitors, such as Koe no Katachi or A Silent Voice. There will always be rivalry between them. I honestly haven't seen A Silent Voice, so I can't really compare. I should see it very soon, but that is an ongoing rivalry which I think will never end. Probably one of the biggest anime rivalries of the decade, I think, being between those two. They will always be compared because they came out at sort of similar-ish times and have very similar themes. And then we have Two Heroes and Promare. Promare is something I will come back to. I have some good things to say about Promare and how it fits into the decade and anime as it's, you know, evolved over time, particularly within this time span. Two Heroes, I think, was just a decent movie. It's My Hero Academia. It's nothing more than that. It's fun, some good saga at the end. It's just an enjoyable, fun watch, but it's nothing, I think, worthy of film of the decade. If anything, it's just a showcase of what MHA has the potential to do. And then I'll just do this last award before we get to the big award, which I want to discuss, and that is Original Anime of the Decade. That went to Kill la Kill. I'm very in support of that. I'm in support generally of works such as Nagashima and Promare and Kill la Kill and those sorts of things, just because of what I think they do for the art as a whole, and that is tackling conventional structures and narrative. When we have shows such as this and other works which have come out prior, so Fooly Cooly, for example, they definitely show an attempt to at least change the game, and I'm not implying that everything or every work should work to challenge structure and structural devices, but I think the bold move to do so should definitely be credited. Kill la Kill does exactly that, as well as works like Promare, as I said, which is why I think these are award worthy. What is award worthy is very questionable, and I don't mean it in the context that this shouldn't ever be viable for an award because it's not art. We're not saying that, because the definition of art philosophically is one which is heavily debated, one which I probably do want to speak about on the podcast someday, but it isn't one I want to get into now because everything we are looking at in summary is art in itself. So now we move on to probably the biggest talk of all of this, and I'm not scared to talk about this, but it's definitely the most talked about topic of both awards, and you can argue even the new type awards, although I wouldn't say there was within the West anyway, a big uproar about the new type awards because most people didn't really look at what the new type awards had to offer. But if I just blurt it out, we have Kimetsu no Yaiba winning both Anime of the Year, as well as within the Funimation Awards, which were months prior, Animation, hence I say Animation of the Decade. One thing that was really funny when it came to Animation of the Decade was that a lot of people assumed it to be Anime of the Decade, and it does apply to series only. I even made the mistake of thinking that it was just animation in whole, but it is Animation of the Decade, so we're discussing Sakuga, we're discussing cinematography and those sorts of things. I think I want to start off with Animation of the Decade rather than Anime of the Year, and I'll get into that criticism a bit later. And firstly, the thing I want to lay out is that I do like how Kimetsu no Yaiba, from a technical standpoint, was achieved and how it was pulled off. This isn't me saying, oh, I don't like it, because I do like it. And it really did attempt some really interesting things in terms of its camera work or the spinning cameras and how it was able to make these final blows seem a lot more cinematic than they were. The watercolor style was also something quite bold, which I didn't think would work, but it did work eventually. We see some of these things really well done in the likes of the Drumhouse arc and the Asakusa arc. Particularly Drumhouse, they really worked well with the camera in that, and how we had the spinning house and then the camera would try to move around that as well. Asakusa arc, I just loved the rotations and everything. So as I was saying, I do like this. I do like what it had to offer. But I'm going to have to say this, and this kind of applies to Anime of the Year as well. I think it only works to be a form of polish for the genre and the art form. At this point, I'm basically talking about both awards simultaneously, and I'll try to distinguish between the two when we get further into the critique. But Kimetsu no Yaiba in general, I don't think is representative of what the decade of anime had to offer. I don't know whether that is like a controversial statement or anything, but personally, I don't think it represents what this decade was and what this decade has tried to do for the art. If anything, I feel like it's one which has already been done and something which is, or something that has been very much established already. And as I said, it works to polish this form of art, or at least this part of the genre, being the battle shonen genre. But in regards to its framework, which is based on, so it's based on long-term goal, how we achieve this is I need to fight X, X, Y, and Z, achieve this goal, and I'm saved, and this person is saved, e.g. Nezuko. And I don't mind this structure, and I don't mind how this is formulated, but that's something which has been done, and it's something which I think, I can't say people are tired of, because they obviously came to support it, but I also feel like this decade was one which was challenging these notions which anime was very much hung up on. So as I said, long-term ambition, I need to defeat X, Y, and Z, I will try my hardest, and with the power of everything, we will overcome this goal. And then we look at other anime which have definitely tried to challenge that. And my main example is Mob Psycho 100, particularly Mob Psycho 100 2, what many claim to be the anime that got robbed, or at least the anime that got robbed in the awards season, at least Crunchyroll Anime Awards at least. And I kind of agree. I think the main reason why I think Mob Psycho 100 deserves this award, or at least, has definitely tried to move beyond something that Kimetsu no Yaiba does, is that it's able to challenge the structures of the battle shonen narrative, or at least the one which has been rinsed out to us almost infinitely. That isn't to say that it hasn't used tropes like its genre counterparts, but I think the most powerful thing that Mob Psycho 100 2 was able to do was just deviate from what it was initially perpetuating, or at least what battle shonen has perpetuated for years on end, by introducing this idea that you are your own protagonist and your life is your own. That immediately challenges what battle shonen has been based on, or at least what a lot of battle shonens try to base themselves on, which is not being bound to this one goal or ambition. And now Mob Psycho 100 in itself has expanded to be whatever is possible. Whatever you want to do is what will happen in this narrative. And Mob in himself, you can potentially argue, has the ability to bend the narrative to his own will. This decade in anime as a whole, I think, has been a lot about challenging, and I'm going to get to say to challenging antagonisms and challenging, as I've also said a bunch of times, structures. If we take the likes of Attack on Titan, has been nuancing its view on the antagonist, particularly with the Return to Shiganshina arc. If we take Vinland Saga, nuancing what we believe to be good and bad. There's sort of a grey area which is explored. Even if we take The Promised Neverland, which has been very recent, even that has tried to challenge that. And so So I think Kimetsu no Yaiba doesn't do much in terms of progressing the art. And I quote, this comes from Austin Creed, on the night of the Crunchyroll Anime Awards, yes, I actually sat down to write this. And although do take it with a grain of salt, I'm not holding him or Crunchyroll to that word because it is what it is. It's probably just something that was written to sound dramatic, but I will read it out anyway. He said on the night of the Crunchyroll Anime Awards before getting into Anime of the Year, he said when he was referring to Anime of the Year and the things that came before it and what so this will mean, he states that each have left their marks not only as giants in their year, but anime that have left impact on the art and the entire industry. From that, what I took from it, what I personally took from it is an award that is very much innovative or representative of innovation within the art and, as he also said, the industry. From an industrial context, although I can't speak about, you know, numbers or whatever, but at least from a visual point of view, at least when we're talking about the industry and construction of these anime, because it's more the visual component, which is now added on to a narrative component, which comes from its manga or its source material. From an industrial context, I think Kimetsu no Yaiba does do very well, and I could potentially argue for innovation in that sense, even if we move away from the likes of episode 19, which is prominently discussed, the watercolor style, as I said, the cinematography in terms of its rotations and the examples I use for the drum house art, blah, blah, blah. It does really well in that area, but then we come to the art. But the art, I think, is something which is so much broader. And as I also said, I'm not going to discuss what art is. Let's just keep it simple and say this is art, despite the potential philosophical implications of that. From a zoomed out point of view, I just don't see whether that has worked for the art. I don't think there's been anything which has bounced off it or will be able to bounce off something like Kimetsu no Yaiba, because it's something which has already been bounced off of, which is, as I said, the classic battle shonen formula, which it perpetuates again. It is changing structure slightly within its seasonal format and it having this top heavy Natsugumo Mountain arc sort of arc structure, and I can sort of agree in that sense. But when we think about the art as a whole and the art of storytelling and the art of audiovisual storytelling, I just don't see where that fits in the wider scale in what seems to be an evolving medium, the decade which has definitely tried to change things up. I feel like Kimetsu no Yaiba, if anything, represents something of the previous decade or something which has already gone before. In support of a show such as Vinland Saga, and I don't want to base my entire argument on why Mob Psycho 100 should have won and not Kimetsu no Yaiba, not particularly, but in respect of Vinland Saga, if we talk about the Crunchyroll Anime Awards more specifically now, in regards to Anime of the Year, I think with how this award seemed to be made out to be being an impact on the art, I think something like Vinland Saga represents the triumph of the historical narrative, and I'll briefly explain. You can say that that's the case for drama, but if we think holistically about the year as a whole and how the years move forward, even if we take this on a slightly larger context, because as stated, or at least what it seemed to be, this is an award that evolves and is based on the evolution of anime. And when we think of Vinland Saga, I think, as well as something like Dororo or Vinland Saga, have worked really hard to pump back the enthusiasm for a historical narrative, or at least an anime based in history or on history. And it also works really well to incorporate that successfully with immaculate storytelling as well, which, so dramatization forged and mixed in with history has worked really well for this year. And the comeback of this genre, or at least a resurgence of this genre, is one which I think we needed. And I go again back to Kimetsu no Yaiba. Although it is a great display of what battle shonen can do, I don't know if that works in terms of what anime can do as a whole, and that is challenging and risking things which we didn't think were possible. I don't think Kimetsu no Yaiba pushes any boundaries, and that is my argument for something like Mob Psycho 100 or Vinland Saga. It tries to change something which we once thought wasn't possible, and Vinland, for example, being able to transform what seemed to be the historical information dump into a 25-episode transitionary anime, as we see Vikings march their way to Vinland, being able to morph the two and dramatize something which seemed like a Wikipedia page, I think is very successful and representative of the year and sort of phase shift to a different type of storytelling, or at least a bit more of a unique type of storytelling. this isn't particularly only consensus, and by that I mean Kimetsu no Yaiba being storming the awards. This isn't just the case for the West as well. This is a case for Japan and Japanese fans, partially. So in the New Type Awards, if you don't know, takes shows from, I believe, the middle of 2018 to about the middle of 2019. It's something like that, and they basically do a poll. It's fan voted, as I said, but we're not using the popularity contest argument. And so Kimetsu no Yaiba and Promare really took big. It basically goes Kimetsu no Yaiba, Promare, Kimetsu no Yaiba, Promare, Kimetsu no Yaiba, Promare. And then there is one award which is sort of a special award which goes to The Promised Neverland. And speaking of The Promised Neverland, sorry, I don't mean to backtrack, but I feel like The Promised Neverland really did, I just want to give it a bit of credit. I think The Promised Neverland definitely did a lot for, from a technical point of view, and something which I speak about prominently, as always, cinematography. In terms of how it was beautifully done in terms of its tracking shots and being able to build tension. I think there is potential for us to discuss, I think there is a bit of bias in regards to how things are animated and achieved, to lean on things such as fight scenes because they're easy as an audience, and not everybody who is aware of how production works. It's easy to tell whether something is what you can consider subjectively well animated within the space of a fight scene. But I think The Promised Neverland, which had no fight scenes, was beautiful in how it was able to direct its shots. All these beautiful moments which were able to build tension in themselves, I think a lot of credit comes to that in terms of how it was animated and pulled off and directed. But if we go back to the 2019 New Type Awards, it does show that the Japanese audience does have somewhat of a similar view in regards to what came out. There is no Mob Psycho 102 within this list. There is no Vinland Saga within this list. And in the middle of pausing, I just reconfirmed the dates, and that comes from July of 2018 to April of 2019. That is what the awards and polls are based on. And funny enough, the show which comes basically right towards the end of the period takes very much almost all of the awards, which I find kind of funny. We can say the same for Promare, but I've kind of made the case for it already. What I think Promare represents is some movement within the art. But I'm not here to just continue the Kimetsu no Yaiba criticism. I think this opens a wider debate as to what makes a show successful. Is innovation necessary for an audience? And I think the Kimetsu no Yaiba phenomena or Demon Slayer phenomena says no. And I've kind of already addressed this. If you've listened to episode 9 of the podcast, I believe it was, The MHA Cult and the State of Shonen, or I believe in my overhaul arc episode, I discussed this as well. It's innovation is not particularly necessary for success or good narrative, and I still stand by that. But Kimetsu no Yaiba is definitely proof of that in its almost biggest form, that one does not need to innovate or completely innovate and change what we believe art and animation and cinematography and narrative are all about. It's simply about tackling what the audience likes, or at least Kimetsu no Yaiba is proof that that is possible. I think there have been a lot of innovative works. If we focus on the Funimation Animation of the Decade Award, I think there have been a lot of innovative works in regards to animation. So my big shout out goes to the Monogatari series, or at least most of it, which has come out this decade. So that's Nise, all up to Zoku Owari, although Zoku Owari is a film, as well as Kizu. But even if we exclude those and just look at Owari Monogatari, Nise Monogatari, Hana Monogatari, Suki Monogatari, Mono Second Season, the list goes on. I think all of those have displayed excellence in how to capture a story in a very different way, which I've never seen before in the likes of anime. The Monogatari series, I think, is innovative in how it's very selective in terms of what it animates and what it doesn't animate, when speech is used, when speech isn't used to communicate messages. Its use of letterboxing, for example, to make something seem or appear more dramatic than it is, when that isn't appropriate. I can continue for a really long time, and I should probably make an episode on Monogatari. I do plan to do arc analyses in the future, though. But it's the case that something that is innovative doesn't prove itself to be something which resonates with this audience, or at least something that is memorable across the decade to eventually be awarded for something. So the basis of what I'm just trying to say is that this reinforces my whole point on how innovation is not necessary. It's not needed in order to resonate with an audience, and so you can argue that producers maybe just base their anime, or at least the art of anime isn't based on this evolutionary chain and pushing the art and being part of the avant-garde and changing what we think art means. No, it doesn't necessarily need to be that. And it is simply just on whether an audience can have fun with it and whether it is constructed to a decent level. So let's move on from Kimetsu no Yaiba. Honestly, I just want to say one more time, I sound like I'm sort of backpedaling and defending myself. I do like Kimetsu no Yaiba, and it sounds mean that I'm jumping on what seems to be a bandwagon and saying that I don't think it deserves these awards. And I'm not really saying that, but I'm kind of saying that. I genuinely like this show and how it's done. There were times when I was catching up where I'm just like, damn, this show is actually just really impressive. It's just really fun to get into. And I felt myself getting immersed into it for a lot of the time which I was watching it. But it's more in contrast to what the awards seem to be made out to be. I don't think it fits that or embodies that as a whole. I want to end my award criticisms on a more positive note, although I don't agree with this one, but I can understand it. And that is the Best Antagonist category in the Crunchyroll Anime Awards. The Best Antagonist was awarded to Isabella from The Promised Neverland, and I think this is more embodying of what the awards seem to be. And although, yes, I am part of the Askeladd gang, just so you are aware, the reason why I do respect Isabella winning this award is how, because it's able to nuance its antagonist to one which is a lot different to something which has been previously explored, and it just shows progress in terms of within anime and within animated storytelling, how we don't need to simply rely on these binary antagonisms, which is something which has been rinsed out within, not even within animated storytelling, but in general within film and culture, has been rinsed out to the ends of existence as something which is still done now. The characters such as Isabella or characters such as Askeladd are able to blur the lines as to what really an antagonist truly is, and that is simply just the presence of an antagonist is what is most powerful. With the likes of The Promised Neverland, she's the supposedly or looking like innocent, caring mother at the orphanage in comparison to Vinland Saga, which is almost a proud antagonist who passively stands there and morphs our protagonist and controls them into doing what he wants because he has this almost foothold on him. Both of these antagonists, even if we just look at Isabella alone, are able to counter what we once thought, or at least counter the rinsed out to the ends of the earth view of an antithesis, and it blurs what we think an antithesis is, and it's nuanced in the sense that an antithesis implies that it is completely opposite, and the values are completely different, and we are completely different people. Whereas someone like Isabella, or if we just bring back Vinland Saga, is able to explore the grey area in between that, in how our antagonists don't need to be these scheming mustache villains who hide in a lair and attempt to destroy the world. They're in fact the people right next to us. I loved how the tension was able to be built up between someone like Isabella and the children in the likes of The Promised Neverland, because they were in the same environment, and so there was this ongoing friction between them because they live together. And with Vinland Saga, Askeladd is right next to Thorfinn right at the time, but you don't see them tearing each other's throats out, although that is both their intentions, basically. And so it's that passive tension. I think these two have explored this area of passive tension, which anime has tried to do and has done in the past. I think the best example of passive tension, and probably the most notable, the two most notable, I would say, is something like Death Note and Code Geass. Those two, I think, are probably the most mainstream and best examples of it. I think the best form of antagonism, or at least the most interesting one, is one which doesn't involve a direct conflict, and it's an indirect conflict of ideas, an indirect conflict literally within the space of being near each other. I think that was something which was explored within Isabella, as well as some of the nominations such as Askeladd within the 2019 Crunchyroll category. And just a quick honorable mention, Shisaki, the reason why I don't think I only voted once, I didn't vote every day of the week, but I think I either voted for Askeladd or Shisaki, although I eventually changed my mind to, okay, I want Askeladd to win. Kind of dumb of me, I know, but with the likes of Shisaki, I think, although I basically did make a whole episode, or a lot of an episode, talking about the potential genius of Shisaki's philosophy, the potential problem, or the crack I think is in that, is I have no problem with direct antagonisms, and by that I mean, you know, physical antagonism. But in regards to Shisaki, I think the problem is that I was doing a lot of the implying, and I don't think the audience in general took it to that length, and seeing that genius, or at least that that level of construction which went into Chisaki as a character. And so I think potentially MHA was holding back, or BNHA was holding back, in how you don't want to build this insane complex of, as I said before, some Marxist ideas and all these other things put together. I think that is a bit of a stretch. And so I understand the reason why they wanted to, obviously, I understand the reason why someone like Horikoshi didn't want to go that far with an ideology, although it is in itself quite a good one already, but it's more subtle than that. And this kind of goes against my point, because subtlety is something which is really good. And someone like Asgard, Isabella do prove that very well. But it's subtle in the way that it's not really taking those ideas and pushing them further to an extent where I think I could label it as antagonist of the year. If anything, it's more the antagonist in my head. The best antagonist of 2019 in my head, yeah. And so that wraps up my award critique for this episode. Hopefully I will be doing this next year, as well as a lot of the yearly content which we did. This is probably, although I don't usually do stuff like seasonal previews or stuff like that, my content is what you can describe as evergreen, and how it usually just applies to any moment in time. So you can listen to an Attack on Titan or Evangelion analysis in 10 years and it will just apply just the same. Whereas something like the 2019 awards, it's a bit limited in how it's very much for the moment. Although I try to make it a bit more varied in just talking about the decade and generally speaking about why I like or maybe not like these anime as much. But what I'm trying to say is that I would feel very fine doing this yearly based content. This is probably the last quote unquote yearly based podcast we'll be doing for this year, or at least for 2019. Since we did the decade review, we did the unskippable openings, we did anime lessons for the year, and then we did this. That I think is enough. And yeah, so hopefully next year I will see you guys on another award critique. Hopefully. So let's do some fun stuff. Let's scrap the analysis. Let's talk about what I'll be reading. That's a preview. What I will be hopefully reading and watching soon. Let's go to the Indie Moment segment for this week. So as I said, I'm going to briefly discuss what I think I will be watching soon, and let me just explain the reasoning for it. The reason is I'm wrapping up the Monogatari series, so I'm on Kizu Part 2, that is Kizu Neketsu. I'm really enjoying it, and I'm verging the end because I am watching in release order rather than the light novel order. So I'm progressing through the Kizu trilogy, then I have Owari Part 2, and then Zoku Owari Monogatari, so that's about 5 hours worth of film content plus 7 episodes left. That isn't much for Monogatari or for me. So I'm going to be working through that, and I needed a new series, or at least a multi-part series to fill the gap. I am now quite a fan of the multi-part series because I can sort of take a break and explore part of the series another time when I want to. And so I've made the decision. It's been hard. I had to decide with other anime in mind, such as, you know, JoJo's, Fate. Fate is another big one which I was considering. But for now, I am going to, and this isn't really an announcement because I said it on Twitter, I have loads of research already, but I'm going to get into Gundam. That is kind of weird for me, considering I have a podcast called Guest in the Mecha, and I don't speak mostly about mecha anime, so that's a bit of a weird thing. I do speak about mecha anime, I do speak about Evangelion, but there is so much more I should speak about, which is, yeah, there's no excuse at this point. So Gundam is what I've been set on doing. I don't believe that will change. I do want to thank Gundam Twitter. I made a meme and everyone kind of agreed, or it seemed like people agreed. Thank you, Gundam Twitter, for being supportive and telling me in a variety of ways how to start and get into the Universal Colony part of Gundam. So I really do appreciate that, and that will basically be me in the summer. I'm going to devote a lot of time to Gundam and trying to immerse myself in the Universal Colony. I've always wanted to watch something which has these sorts of larger political strokes and just immerse myself in this big political space narrative. So with the likes of Legend of the Galactic Heroes, that's something I've been set on watching for probably years now, but I just haven't made the push. But with something like Gundam, although I'm not comparing the two because I haven't seen either of them yet, but I feel like the difference is I can more willingly take a break from Gundam when I want, because once I finish the series, I'm not obliged to move on to a next one. There's a lot of space between them, and I don't mean space as a pun. So that's the plans for Gundam. I'm excited. Thank you, Gundam Twitter. As always, I salute you. And that is something I will be starting probably within the summer. I'd also love to do more analysis on this because I think mecha analysis is something we need on the podcast. It is ironic, as I said, that I host Get in the Mecha with not enough mecha content. And it would be really nice to analyze, as I also said, these political strokes and the larger grand narrative which comes out of Gundam, which is something I really admire that not many anime do just because I can understand length, but creating these multi-part, multi-threaded narratives that have so many parts and dimensions to them, that is something that Gundam and not many have done. Not many have walked down this path, and so I respect it and I'm honored to take on this journey. So let's wrap up this podcast. Let's talk about award season in general, what I think of it, and potentially what it represents. So as I said, award season is never going to please everybody. It is how it is, and yes, it is a popularity contest, but I think we should also, or I believe I've tried to make the attempt to go beyond that and just evaluate it from your own perspective rather than just being bound to this idea that this is this and this is that. Obviously, we can't change the results, and I'm not suggesting they should. It was fair. I don't agree with the 70-30 split in terms of representation, but as I said, it is what it is. I voted, and that was the result either way. But one of the big themes of this podcast has just been that I don't think that should limit discourse in terms of debating art and debating anime and debating film, etc. So just to conclude, I'm keeping this short. I personally don't think that some of the anime within the awards season represents fully what the decade or at least this year of anime has been about, particularly 2019 being the conclusion to the decade. I would think that 2019 showed the amount of progress which we've made in terms of anime and storytelling. I don't think something like Kimetsu no Yaiba represents that, but as I said, it is what it is. From my perspective, I do think anime has moved very far this decade at least, being able to challenge the conventional and change things up as art does and art progresses. And so, although this might not have all been awarded, it is definitely something to appreciate. Thank you for listening to this episode of Get in the Mecha. That has been episode 32. It still doesn't feel like we're in the 30s. I feel like we haven't done over like 20 episodes at least. But it's been quite a journey and it has been quite a decade for anime in 2019 in general. So that's it really. Thank you for listening. Hopefully you understand my criticisms and where I'm coming from. Feel free to leave a review on iTunes, on your iOS device, or if you have access to iTunes wherever. It is really appreciated, helps share the love of the show. So that has been the episode for this week. I have been your host, Jamal, today. Have a great week, day, whatever you're doing. I have been your host, Jamal, today, and this has been Get in the Mecha. The music in this production goes as follows. 8-bit title screen by Joth, Mandatory Overtime by Joth, and Difference by Chasers Gaming.